Hi there, everyone, and welcome again to the Lent Bible Binge podcast. And we are at episode 5 today. If you've been tracking with us since day 1, you should be hearing this on a Sunday. And on the Sundays, we want to do something a little bit different to how we've been rolling every day with our scripture reading. We think we'd do something different today. And that's because you're going to be heading off to church and hearing the scriptures read in the best possible forum, which is the assembly of God's people together, gathered in worship. And you'll hear the scripture read there, and we want to encourage that. And that's far more important than listening to a podcast on a Sunday. All right. This provides an opportunity for you to play catch up. If you got behind or missed an episode during the week, today's a good day to scroll back, find the episode you missed and hit play and catch up so that we can hit Monday all together on the same page. So there's nothing really more to be done here, apart from if you're twiddling your thumbs and wishing there was a bit of a podcast to listen to. I'm going to do my best to fill the void in your life by reflecting a little bit on something we read this week. We read the book of Ruth, and I want to just turn my attention there, and great to have your company as I do that, because it's an amazing little book, but its meaning might escape us at first reading. When we first encounter the book of Ruth, it strikes us in our modern ears as a love story, a romantic story about a poor woman who is out in the field picking up what she can off the ground. She is spotted by a wealthy landowner. In our minds, he might be a good-looking guy. She's a beautiful young woman, and he falls in love and can't help himself but redeem her, rescue her from her situation, marry her, and they all live happily ever after. And that's, at first reading, that's probably quite a good thing to get out of it. But there's much more going on than that, especially when we remind ourselves that the authors of Scripture are not Jane Austen. They are not writing they're not writing romance novels, basically. So why is the book of Ruth in our Bibles if it's not to tell us a nice romance story? There's a number of things going on. First of all, we could notice that Boaz is a type of Christ, or it's kind of theological language. Boaz is a small reflection of Christ in that he comes into the situation. He is moved by compassion to meet the needs of Ruth and her family. And so he does so at greater cost to himself. He embraces the situation and brings his rescuing power to play in that moment and redeems the family and preserves their future. So that's a little image of Christ, isn't it, of what Christ does for us. He has looked on at us in our need and our desperation. We cannot help ourselves. He sees our plight, and he steps in, moved by compassion, to restore and redeem us and rescue us and set us on our feet again. So that's an obvious thing. If we start thinking about what is the story about, it points to Christ in some ways. But there's something else going on, and the clue is in the last chapter of Ruth. There's this strange genealogy in the last 3 or 4 verses, and it's the genealogy from a man by the name of Perez through to David. From Perez to King David, it tells the story of the generations, and it just sort of puts it in there out of the blue, and you're like, why throw a genealogy in the end of this nice love story? Perez's name comes up also when the women of the town are praising Boaz. They speak blessing over him, and they say, and may your house be like the house of Perez. So we've got this strange character called Perez who shows up, and to figure out who he is and why Perez is a big feature in the book of Ruth, we have to go back to the book of Genesis, and we have to think about one of the 12 sons of Israel. Judah is one of Jacob's sons, Israel's sons, and at the end of his life, Jacob blesses his sons and says this to Judah: the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet. So the scepter means authority to rule, royal authority. And the blessing that Jacob is pronouncing over Judah, his son, is that from you, Judah, from your lineage, your descendants will come the line of royal authority in Israel. The royal line belongs to you, which is kind of exciting if you think, man, my descendants are going to be royalty. That's all good news. But there is a snag in the story. As the Puritans used to say about the biblical characters, God draws straight lines with crooked sticks. And here we have what seems like God's purposes is a pretty straight line, but we're dealing with real people. And Judah has a son named Perez. Here's Perez, our little famous guy from the book of Ruth. Perez is an illegitimate son. Okay, Perez was not born to Judah's wife. Perez was born to another woman by the name of Tamar. And the story of that encounter can be found in the book of Genesis. So the reason this is a problem is because in the law that God gave to Israel, there is this this part of the law in Deuteronomy 23. It says this: no one born of a forbidden union may enter the assembly of the Lord. Even to the 10th generation, none of his descendants may enter the assembly of the Lord. Okay, so that means that for those who are born in an illegitimate union, as Perez was, neither he nor his descendants, including him, up to 10 generations, can participate in the worship and temple rites of Israel. They are excluded from the assembly. So how can a king come from Judah's line if for 10 generations his family is excluded from participating in the worship of Israel and participating in anything to do with the temple rites? Well, they can't. And this is where the book of Ruth comes in. The story of Ruth and that strange little genealogy at the end of the book is there to show us that the first legitimate generation after Perez's illegitimacy lands right at the time of David. So his generation is the first legitimate generation, and God moves swiftly to anoint someone in that generation, i.e. David, because God is intent on following through on the blessing that was given to Judah. From Judah's line would come the king. There are 10 generations where that cannot happen, but the first generation where it can happen, God is swift to anoint, and David is the true king. You might be familiar with how the story carries on after the book of Ruth. The people of Israel cry out for a king. They want to be like the other nations. The other nations look cool because they've got fancy kings and ride chariots, but they haven't got one, and they are crying out for a king. Now, God has that king in mind, but it's premature. But he concedes to Israel's pleas. He gives them what they want, and they get Saul as their king. But he, as I said, he is a premature king. He is not the king that God has in mind for his people, and that turns out to be a royal disaster, we could say. So that's why the story of Ruth is in our Bibles. It's there to show us that the first legitimate generation following Perez is the generation of David, and that David is God's true choice for king. So there you have it, the book of Ruth, not just a love story, not just a romantic little interlude in the middle of all the chaos of Judges and 1 Samuel. It is a story pointing to the fact that God has a king in mind, and in his good time, God has it worked out despite the mess and disobedience and sin and all the chaos of our human lives. God draws straight lines with crooked sticks.